400 years ago this month, England lost its virgin queen, Elizabeth I. She ascended to the throne when she was 25, and she became a steel-willed and impassive countenance for a country at risk from internal divisions and foreign rivalries. By the time her 44-year reign ended in 1603, Elizabeth had quashed Catholic threats to her Protestant rule, her navy had defeated what had been Spain's invincible armada, and she was no longer an underestimated member of the House of Tudor, but had become the living personification of the British crown. The Folger Shakespeare Library here in Washington is marking the 400th anniversary of Good Queen Bess's death with an examination of her reign based mostly on artifacts from the Folger's own holdings. The show opens next week. Curator Georgiana Ziegler gave us a preview, starting with a modern interpretation of this legendary ruler. Would you believe an Elizabethan Barbie doll?
It's dressed in an Elizabethan-style costume, and instead of having sort of the usual blonde hair or black hair, she has red hair, which is unusual for a Barbie doll, in
Indeed.
A sort of Elizabethan poof.
But there she is in her ruff, you know, that pleated white collar that she wears, very elaborate embroidered clothing, lots of gold applique to it, her jewelry. She was quite a dresser, the real Elizabeth.
Oh, yes, yes. I think she saw her wardrobe as an emblem of her power, and it was part of her making an impression, particularly for all the foreign ambassadors and envoys who came through her court. I think she was a fairly good height at the time, remembering that most people were generally smaller than people today, anyway. But she was, you know, she did have a good person, and she had her father's red hair, too, Henry VIII's hair.
Elizabeth Barbie looks pretty out of place in the Folger's Great Hall. Elizabethan style, by the way, with its dark oak paneling and coffered ceiling embossed with Tudor roses. More at home here, a letter in Elizabeth's own hand, written to her nephew, James of Scotland. He later succeeded her to the throne.
In this particular letter, which is written in around March of 1593, about 10 years before the end of her reign, she's giving political advice to James, telling him that he needs to deal more forcefully with some of the Scottish earls.
But she's giving advice. She's telling him, I'm a ruler, here's what you need to do.
That's right, yes. But at the end of the letter, she's running out of paper, and she has a little note on the side where she apologizes for her bad handwriting.
Bad handwriting might be a little strong. Elizabeth had a very elegant script. Her L's are tall and graceful. They end with looping squiggles. And then there's her signature, clear and big. Bigger than anything else on the page. A sure sign of a person who knows she is queen. And so did her subjects. At the other end of the Folger's Great Hall, a list of New Year's gifts the queen received in 1584 is a long list.
It's an 11-foot vellum scroll, and it's all calibrated according to where you fell in society, because it begins with the earls and the viscounts at the top, and at the bottom of the scroll, if you keep unrolling it and going on and on, it includes her court dwarf, her doctors, her apothecaries, and her musicians. One of the musicians gave her lute strings.
But and what did the first person on this list give to her? Can you make that out?
Near the top of the list is the Earl of Leicester, who, of course, was her great favorite. And he gave her a tan velvet house coat lined with carnation velvet with buttons and loops of gold.
They really kept an inventory.
That's right. Oh, every little thing. I mean, her wardrobe was inventoried from time to time, and even down to the last pearl on the last button. In fact, there are lists of jewels that were lost by the queen at different places.
If that scroll's 1584, does William Shakespeare's name appear on it, or
no.
Was that a later relation? He was a lot younger than she was.
That's right. We tend to forget that he only actually came into his career in the 1590s, which is sort of the last 10 or so years of her reign.
Yeah, but he had some of his plays performed at her court.
Exactly, yes. Two of the plays that we know for sure were performed at her court are Love's Labour's Lost and The Merry Wives of Windsor, because we have early copies of the printed plays that say, in fact, on the title pages, that they were performed before Her Majesty.
Ah, But nobody took it up to her and asked for one of those huge signatures, an autograph.
No.
What do you think it is, Miss Ziegler? Here we are, 400 years after the death of Queen Elizabeth, and still this enormous public fascination with her staying power. What is that about?
She was basically a woman managing a country by herself with an entirely male privy council, and we admire that. I think every period sort of rereads Elizabeth according to their own ideas about women, but I think today we're in a situation where we particularly admire a woman like that who's able to succeed.
Mm-hmm. Remember that old game that we used to play about if you could have the dream dinner party, who would you like to sit around your table? And Shakespeare always appeared on people's lists, but I bet Elizabeth I did not. What do you think?
Probably not. I think most people think of Shakespeare more than, you know, than they think about Elizabeth. But I don't know, maybe for modern women, Elizabeth, she certainly would be on my dinner party list.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Curator Georgiana Ziegler at the Folger Shakespeare Library here in Washington. The exhibition, Elizabeth I, Then and Now, will be there until August.